Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Medical Monday, January 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Support comes from CHP Berkshires, providing medical and dental care for patients of all ages in the Berkshires, plus women's health through the lifespan. CHP Mobile Health is on the road with same-day care for minor illness, chpberkshires.org. Today we welcome neurosurgical oncologist Dr. Ahmed Malaise of Albany Med. Dr. Malaise specializes in the advanced surgical treatment of primary and metastatic tumors of the spine and brain. He also sees adult patients with neck and back pain caused by degeneration or herniated discs. If you have a question, call now, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll meet Dr. Malaise and take your calls coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Here to talk about neurosurgical oncology today is Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Medical Center, one of the region's few fellowship-trained neurosurgical oncologists. Dr. Malaise specializes in the advanced surgical treatment of primary and metastatic tumors of the spine and brain. He also sees adult patients with neck and back pain caused by degeneration or herniated discs. Dr. Malaise completed his fellowship training at the prestigious University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston. He completed his residency training at Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School in Newark, where he also received his medical degree. His research interests include the outcomes of surgery and radiation treatment for spinal tumors. If you have a question, give us a shout, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Or you may email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. Almost forgot the email. Dr. Malaise, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so let's start with some definitions here. Degenerative spine disease. I'm familiar with sort of injury-related spinal issues and maybe use issues, herniated discs and whatnot. But what is it? What is degenerative spine disease?
So it's just it's a fancy way of saying the wear and tear of the spine.
So
from daily
is it really
use.
A disease?
Not really.
Okay.
It's a fancy term.
Okay.
You know?
Fair enough.
But basically, it's what everyone has. You know, the wear and tear of the spine, the wear and tear of living, lifting.
Okay.
You know? So not every degenerative breakdown or has to be surgically managed. There's non-operative managements. If it becomes a structural problem that we could potentially reverse or fix surgically, that's where we come in.
Mm. And you have, as I understand it, and I know I understand very little, but I understand that the hospital has a new venture with a device company that has made your work interesting and outcomes better. Explain that.
Yeah, so Albany Med is definitely very invested in excellent outcomes. I'll say that first and foremost. Institutionally, it's definitely looking out for its community and its people. So the two ventures that Albany Med has really invested in, one is from the degenerative perspective. So we've partnered up with a company called Solony Spine, and what they do is they've made complex spine surgeries simple. Basically, when we talk about spine surgery, a lot of the times we're talking about fusions, hardware, screws, rods.
Okay.
And so their hardware allows us to interface with different technology platforms. And what that does is it makes surgery safer and gives us better outcomes. And
okay.
That's unique.
Now, most of us are not doctors. Most of us are not spinal doctors. So when you say it allows you to matrix with different technology modalities, what are you talking about?
So we're talking about spine navigation. We're talking about stealth. We're talking about robotics.
What do you mean stealth?
Yeah. So what happens is in the operating room, when you want to put in hardware, you want to avoid critical structures that can cause bad outcomes. So you start navigating your hardware and understanding exactly where you're going to place it.
So these are screws, nuts, bolts.
So screws, nuts, bolts are registered into this computer. And we can navigate, just like, you know, GPS, Google Maps, Waze, we can navigate to exact pinpoint where we want the hardware to go. And that leads to us avoiding complications. That's a big thing in spine surgery that you want to avoid because they could be devastating. So it allows us to use all avenues of technology to make it safer. And that's unique because sometimes you're beholden to a certain technology with certain hardware, the screws, rods, et cetera.
Now, okay, we've talked about hardware several times now. Explain why this is a game changer.
It's a game changer because usually when you have hardware,
let me interrupt for a sec. The hardware, the nuts, the bolts, whatever, the bars, this is to fix problems in the spinal column?
Correct. It's to structurally change the spinal column. So when someone has spine surgery, it's a structural problem. So you need to address the structure. And to address the structure, you have to give support, right? And those support comes in screws and rods.
Okay.
So when I say hardware, that's what I'm talking about, screws and rods.
Gotcha.
So typically those screws and rods, you're limited to one technology, one platform of technology. But we don't want limitations in the OR. You want to use every aspect of technology to make things better. So something that lets you use different modalities, different technologies, be it stealth, be it a robot, be it navigation, you want that because it allows you to tell the patient, I'm going to use everything that we have, everything that's coming out to make it safe for you.
The hardware then is, the hardware then is the breakthrough. This is a different type of hardware.
It's a hard.
Explain
breakthrough.
What the old stuff was like first.
Yeah. So basically, I would give you, a screw and say you can put this screw in, but you have to use this robot.
Okay.
Okay. We don't have that robot. We have robot B. Can't use it. Therefore, my surgery, I can't use the technology to make it safer because it's not compatible. Now I have a screw and I say I want to use it. And I only have robot B. Perfect. What about robot C? Perfect. What about stealth? Perfect. This hardware technology is compatible with anything any hospital has. At Albany Med, we have many different modalities to make the surgery safer, and I can use any one of them. That's unique.
Why didn't they, when they were making the screws and rods and everything else to begin with, why didn't they just do it this way? In other words, I don't understand why, to me, a screw is a screw. A rod is a rod. Is it the material that it's made of? What is the difference?
The material itself is not different. It's what you're putting it on. So you have to put it on a screwdriver, right?
Right.
The screwdriver has to register into certain technology. Why didn't they do it in the past? You'd have to ask them, right? But if a company A makes hardware, they're going to want you to use company A's robot, for instance. This company said, we're going to make the hardware, the screwdriver, everything, and we're going to allow the surgeon to make the determination what technology they want to use.
And how does this help you?
It doesn't limit me. I become limitless in offering whatever technology I need to make surgery safe.
And I understand Sloan Kettering and others use this, but it's not very common.
No, so that's the hardware. What Sloan Kettering and all that use, the National Cancer Center, is something called, it's from a company called Icotech. It's carbon fiber PEEK material. What that is traditional screws are made of titanium.
Ah.
Right? This is made of carbon fiber PEEK. Why carbon fiber PEEK? Carbon fiber PEEK allows us, so when we talk about cancer patients who need surgery, apart from the degenerative patients, cancer patients, their post-op care and what they need after is a lot different. We're talking about radiation, we're talking about chemo, and then we're talking about imaging after, MRIs, PET scans, etc. So when you talk about titanium and you're doing MRIs, it causes a lot of artifact. It makes it difficult to see. And in cancer patients, it's important for us to see. It's important for us to see, is the tumor back? Is it responding to treatment? So you don't want to be limited visually, and that's taken out the limitation when you talk about carbon fiber PEEK. The second thing is radiation. When you deliver radiation, we know that the photon beams of radiation bounce off metal.
Oh, of course.
So if I'm delivering radiation to an area of tumor with metal, you're not going to get full dose. And we know that from literature, from studies, et cetera.
Well, you get scatter?
Get scatter, exactly.
And will that potentially harm other tissue?
Correct.
So fascinating.
So carbon fiber PEEK doesn't cause scatter of these photons, so you're getting the full dose. The way I tell patients is this hardware allows you to puts you on the best track for treatment response. We're trying to put you on the best track to conquer cancer. I'm one cog in the wheel. I'd like to say I cure cancer. I don't, but I want you to, in my hands, to give you the best chance to conquer cancer.
Now, when you go in to do your work, surgery, are you using robots all the time, or are you using the old-fashioned scalpel?
No. So it depends on the surgery. Not all surgery is the same. Do I use certain technology modalities? Absolutely. Do sometimes I don't? Absolutely. It's not what, you know, the same surgery, the same steps. You have to take each patient and their surgery and understand what you need.
I have to say, this is probably the most confused I've ever been on a Medical Monday, and usually I'm confused. Let's take a break here, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551 is our number. VoxPop at WAMC.org. Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Medical Center joins us. Neurosurgical oncology. Your call's coming up. Count Basie and the orchestra there on Vox Pop. Hey, the lockbox is open. I won't belabor the point here, but we are filling it to keep our, just get it as full as we can before the February fund drive begins on the 3rd. You know, the more we fill it now, the shorter the drive. So you can help. You can call 800-323-9262 if you want. Operators are standing by. Or you can email us. Nope, you can go to online. That's right, WAMC.org. Old guy has trouble with technology, as we saw in the first segment of this program. WAMC.org. It's Medical Monday. Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Medical Center joins us today. Neurosurgical oncology and general spine surgery. And you talk about implants here for spine tumor patients. What exactly is in the implant? Is this a radioactive material?
No, I mean, we kind of touched upon it. It's the implant itself, just the consistency or how it's made, you know, not titanium, carbon fiber.
But this is, so in other words, we're talking about nuts and bolts here again.
Yeah.
Okay. This is not an implant of something that is radiation, something designed to decrease tumors.
I wish.
Really?
I wish.
Oh, did I come up with something?
Hey, man, I'm willing to invest if you got the idea.
I'll cut you in. All right, let's go to Adams, Massachusetts. Jim, you're on.
Yay, Ray.
What's happening, man?
Yes, I'm going to be 81 years old tomorrow.
Hey, congratulate! I remember when you were 80, and it was a very exciting call. So happy birthday, Jim.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I'm still hanging in there.
Good.
Yeah, I've had the sciatic nerve problem on primarily on my left side, but I have some symptoms on the right. It'll be 4 years this May that I've been going on with it. I went back more regularly to my chiropractor. That's helped a lot. Also had a inversion table I had purchased, used a couple of years, few years before. Hadn't really used it before then. Probably should have. Could have forestalled this happening with gravity pulling everything together there. It's between the L5 and S1 vertebrae, the disc that is herniated, pinching the nerve roots coming out of the spinal cord. I haven't been on the inversion table lately for the last 6 months or more. I've been doing more stretching and twisting and also some strengthening exercises, isometric, isotonic exercises primarily. And I think I feel that it's relieving the pressure somewhat, and I get some different little twinges and twangs in my legs and my feet, primarily the left one, some on the right too, even.
Yeah. You have a question.
What would you do for herniated disc of that type?
Yeah, so...
Can't tell, huh?
No. Here's the thing. This is how I would respond to, you know, someone who's dealing with herniated disc and symptoms of it. Remember that relief from herniated disc degeneration, one aspect is surgery, and that's the last aspect. There is, like you've been doing, the chiropractor, the inversion tables. There's also pain management for injections. And I tell patients with herniated disc symptoms, surgery is the last option. There's many non-surgical, less invasive things. And you go from least invasive to most invasive. And when you talk about outcomes or successive surgeries, when you talk about degeneration, I tell patients the metric is quality of life. If this is not affecting your quality of life in a sense of you're able to accomplish your adult daily living activities, there's no reason to get to put yourself on the operating room table. If you're able to manage it with conservative measures, chiro, inversion, pain management, continue that measure. So you're doing the right things with the non-surgical options. There's still other things to exhaust. And as long as you're able to live your life, I mean, 81 years young, you know, happy birthday to you. Yeah. You're doing
well,
good.
I am a little restricted in going up and down stairs. I have a lot of work to accomplish around my house, all the way from the basement to the attic, and I'd like to have a little more freedom of motion and movement and less muscles stiff and locked down in pain. I don't take anything for the pain. It's not that bad now anymore. I never took anything at the start even, really, but I have a high threshold of pain. Everyone's told me that all my life, dentists and doctors.
Okay. And you listen to this show, so it obviously shows. Jim, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. So Jim is 81 tomorrow, right? If we live long enough, we're all going to have degeneration of the discs, aren't we?
Correct. It's inevitable. We went from, you know, walking on all fours to walking on two legs.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to get degeneration. Not everyone who has degeneration needs surgery. And that's what I want people to understand is part of it is amending your life. As we get older, things we used to do when we were 10, 20, 30 years younger, you're not going to be able to do as you get older. So there's an amendment of life.
Yeah.
And there's non-invasive ways for you to get relief. To expect that you're going to have 100% pain relief, it doesn't happen. And I'm very hesitant to, actually I don't operate on people who haven't tried less invasive ways. And the reason being is I wouldn't let my own family do that.
Right. Yeah, that makes point. Jim uses an inversion table.
Sure.
And I remember seeing those hit the national consciousness in the 70s. I remember because my mom had one. Do they do anything or is this snake oil?
No, it does something. I mean, if you think about it, when we stand, gravity pulls us down.
Right.
And so it's a lot more stress. So the inversion kind of helps extend our back. It helps relieve some of the pressure, the load pain that we have on our back. That's why Batman, you know, sleeps upside down, right?
I didn't know that.
You have back pain at the end of the night.
You see? Thank you, Dr. Ahmed Malaise, for being here today. Dr. Malaise is with Albany Med. He's a neurosurgical oncologist. And let's go to Kingston. It's Bonnie. Hello, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay.
So I had a question. My mom has a herniated disc from probably about 15 years ago. She fell off, actually more than that, probably about 20, 25 years ago, she fell off a horse. And she's had back pain ever since. It was managed with chiropractic care and medicinal management because she wasn't really keen on having the surgery because there was no guarantee. But lately, like within the past couple months, it's been dramatically worse to the point where she can't walk more than a couple steps and she's like dying in agony of pain. And we were just actually at ShopRite this morning and she actually just like went to stand up and fell down because she couldn't feel her leg at all.
That's bad.
Yeah, so something like that, you know, when you have an acute change, something that, you know, someone's been dealing with for a long time and suddenly something gets worse or symptoms have changed, my recommendation would be to get evaluated, to get new imaging, get evaluated, because something's probably different. So I would definitely recommend you come, you know, bring your mom and let's get some new imaging and see what's happening.
Bonnie, thanks a lot for the call. All right, you ready for some, this is really quite something. Are you ready to just feel humbled? Here we go.
Always.
This is from Jennifer, Jason, and Olivia. Dr. Malaise is a hero in all caps. I'm listening to your show and I don't have a question, but wanted to express how amazing Dr. Malaise is. This man is our true hero, as he has been pivotal in helping our teenage daughter by removing tumors from her spine not once but twice. The man is absolutely amazing. While this past year with her surgeries and treatments has been extremely stressful, we owe him so much gratitude and know she is in the best hands. That's from Jennifer, Jason, and Olivia.
Thank you. I'm very humbled by that.
That's got to be taking tumors off the are you talking about off the spinal cord or off the spine? It's the spinal column.
Both. Both.
Hey, you nick the spinal cord and you're in trouble. I mean.
Yeah. That's why we use all technologies and techniques.
So you use radiation on that or laser or what do you do to get rid of them?
So when you talk about tumors on the spine, so when you always have to think about in adjuvant or in conjunction with radiation. If the tumor is compressing the spinal cord and the person's losing function, you have to go and get the tumor off the spinal cord and then stabilize the spine. And that's the screws and rods we talk about.
Yeah.
And then you set them up for radiation. That's kind of the 1-2 punch to get it going, right?
So this is why the carbon fiber is much more advantageous.
Correct. Interesting. Correct.
Okay. You know what? This is crazy talk, all right? Here's another one that says, Dr. Malaise, who is your one in a million favorite patient? Dr. Malaise is welcome to speak about Michael Peck. We're beyond grateful for Dr. Malaise, Carbon Fiber, and New York Proton Center.
Yeah.
It's from Deanna and Michael.
Very humbled, very great people. And yeah, so.
You're paying these people?
No.
No?
So, first off, shout out to the Peck family. Michael, this is one of the stories where he had a primary bone tumor in the lumbar spine that was pushing on the nerves down there. And this type of tumor is pretty aggressive. So we coordinated it with, and this is where collaboration and relationships are really important.
Yeah.
He needed a special type of radiation called proton therapy. We don't have that in the capital region, but that doesn't mean we can't figure out how to get patients there.
What is proton therapy?
So it's a type of radiation. So we talk about radiation being photons. Proton therapy is the radiation is protons.
And why the advantage?
So proton is you can give higher dose to certain tumors and saving the surrounding structures from getting radiation.
So it doesn't penetrate beyond the target.
Correct. Correct. So if you put a flashlight to a piece of paper and in the dark, you'll see some light on the back wall of it.
Yeah.
Proton, you shine that flashlight and less light is getting to that wall. That wall is the critical, it's like your spinal cord. You don't want light to go there. So we did a surgery on him. We put the carbon fiber and then we sent him to the New York Proton Center with my colleagues, Dr. Chhabra. And he was able to, and it's pretty amazing what you see because there's no artifact in the carbon, delineate what is critical, what is not, give him high dose to that area. And, you know, thank God he's doing well.
Technology is amazing, isn't it?
It is.
The number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a question for neurosurgical oncologist Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Med, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. What say we head down to PA? We'll go to Jim in Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, go ahead.
How important is low-dose naloxone and ketamine in the relieving of pain associated with spinal surgery?
Low-dose naloxone, did you say?
Yeah.
And ketamine. Okay, well, go ahead, Doc.
So in terms of after-surgical care, you know, different patients respond differently, and that's why I work with my pain management colleagues, where we've set up a service where all spine patients are followed by the acute pain service and are given a different concoction of medication to help with the post-op pain. So be it naloxone, ketamine, some other forms of medication. Again, it goes in conjunction with surgery and then after surgical care with our anesthesia pain management team, which have been great. And again, the idea is best patient outcomes.
Jim. Want to follow up?
No, it's okay. Thanks.
Have a great whatever. 800-348-2551. Our guest today is Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Med. Mike in Eagle Bridge. Mike, you're on.
Hey, I had recently had a little bit of a tingling feeling in my lip. And so then I didn't think nothing of it. A couple days later, I went to work, and I got this massive pain in my lip. My whole right side, my arm was tingling, my leg. I couldn't stand up. I thought I was having a stroke. I called the rescue squad. They took me to the emergency room. I had an MRI, a CAT scan, echocardiogram. They couldn't find anything. And someone said, well, maybe it was a pinched nerve. So I called a chiropractor, and they said they never heard of anything happening on both extremities like that. And it was really like a serious stroke. I mean, I really thought I was going to die. And I'm just – and now I'm fine. I don't know what it was. It could have been some kind of a pinched nerve or something like that.
Yeah, so the nervous system is a very complex creature, you know, and typically when you talk about pinched nerves in the spine, the thing is that it goes to the arms and legs, but it won't go to the face. You know, the spinal cord starts below that. And when you talk about spinal cord pinched nerves, the spinal cord is this really complex creature as well. Usually it's one side, left or right. It doesn't really go both sides. So some of the symptoms you're describing don't clearly define as spinal cord, but it's definitely something to check out. Could it be something with your nervous system? No question. Pinpointing it may be a little bit difficult.
Mike.
Well, I did set up an appointment to see a neurologist, but that's, of course, it's not until February, but and a vascular surgeon, because they thought maybe it was something with arteries or something like that. So I had a heart monitor to put on, and they found nothing. So what you're saying, that it could possibly have been a nerve then.
It could have been. Again, it's pretty complex, but I think you're doing the right thing by seeking out different professional medical opinions, cardiologist, neurologist, et cetera. Definitely, you shouldn't. The event that you had was definitely very odd.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck. 800-348-2551. So you do brain surgery as well?
I do. I do. I mainly focus on spine, but I do brain surgery.
Yeah, brain tumor. When you're treating a brain tumor, I assume, and maybe I'm wrong, radiation is tougher to pinpoint, and it's more dangerous to pinpoint?
No. I think, again, back in the day, radiation for the brain was whole brain radiation.
Yeah.
Thankfully, some really, really smart people came up with different technology to pinpoint and target certain areas within the brain, stereotactic radiation. And so radiation in general has become safer and safer. The big thing is you got to make sure the patient doesn't move, because you're pinpointing it almost like a cone to where exactly you want.
Yeah. How do you map that? Excuse me.
Yeah. So I equate it to Microsoft Art.
Oh, really?
You basically take a pencil, you know, and you draw a line of where you want the radiation to go and stay within what field. And then based on certain calculations, it'll tell you where in this tumor margin is going to get full dose, and beyond that tumor margin, how much dose it's going to get.
So the ostensibly okay areas that aren't.
Correct.
Is a proton beam indicated here? I mean,
so there's certain indications for proton. Not every pathology or type of cancer needs proton. Proton, there's certain reasons to use proton. Reirradiation multiple times if it's in a critical area where there's certain things around that's like a no-touch area. And then tumors that are very resistant to radiation that you have to give a lot of radiation for. Those types of tumors are called sarcomas. Right. So not every type of tumor needs proton. Most need photon.
Okay. When you are doing, and I don't even know, I mean, I assume that the blood-brain barrier makes it tougher to do chemo on brain.
Yes.
Right? But if you're doing radiation, do you have to cut a hole in the skull?
No. No. So you bring up a great point, the blood-brain barrier. It's the protector of the brain. So, yes, a lot of systemic treatments, chemos, immunos, don't get to the brain. That's where kind of radiation swoops and saves the day, because radiation penetrates tissue, penetrates bone.
Through the bone.
And can really control disease that's gone to the brain. You don't need to cut anything, thankfully.
Let's take a quick break here. Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Med is here. It's neurosurgical oncology. We'll get back to your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551 if you want to call, or if you want to email. It's voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Guitar great Larry Carlton there, Upper Kern, here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. Don't forget the lockbox is open. We have the February fun drive coming on the 3rd. We want to fill the lockbox. You want to make a pledge? We want to take it. 800-323-9262 or WAMC.org to make your secure online pledge. We're joined today by Dr. Ahmed Malaise from Albany Medical Center. This email from Kathy at voxpop@wamc.org. A relative passed away from 5 years after 5 years from esophageal cancer. After the initial radiation treatment, they developed spinal cancer just posterior to the initial esophageal cancer. The surgeons had to insert a cage in the spine to stabilize it. My question, do some radiation therapies cause other problems? And that's from Kathy.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Thank you, Kathy. So, yes, radiation can cause other cancers, and that's why it's very important to understand radiation toxicity and maximal dose. That's why we don't want to radiate normal tissue, because you can cause cancer. So cancer is caused when a cell has a break in the DNA, and then it starts to divide uncontrollably. Radiation causes breaks in DNA, so you're breaking the DNA of tumor. So if a surrounding structure takes a lot of radiation, it'll break the DNA there and can cause radiation-induced malignancies. That is a known cause or a known risk. Again, is it common? No, because we try to ensure that, you know, the radiation oncologists do a great job of understanding maximal dose, things like that.
Is there any study into putting the DNA back together?
Yes. There are looking at, so it's not putting DNA back together, but understanding DNA repair.
Yeah.
So understanding the mechanism of DNA repair. You know, and the next, I argue that what we're doing now to try to treat cancers smarter is something called immunotherapy, where we're using our own body's response to target the cancer, where we're using certain markers that certain cancers have.
Yeah.
To go after those cells specifically versus all cells, like in chemotherapy. You know, I say chemotherapy is like going fishing with a stick of dynamite. Immunotherapy.
So it's a macro approach.
Correct.
Okay.
Immunotherapy is way more targeted.
But does it always work?
It doesn't always work, right? And you have to have certain mutations, certain markers. So not everyone can get immunotherapy.
Are there drawbacks to immunotherapy besides it sometimes not working?
Yeah, I mean, globally, and again, oncologists would speak to the specifics of each one, but generally each immunotherapy has a certain side effect depending on what it's targeting, what it's doing.
Yeah.
You know, from the surgical perspective, when I hear someone is on immunotherapy, what immunotherapy has changed is before I operate on someone, I always want to understand their treatment. Where are they in their treatment paradigm? Have they gotten radiation or not? Are they on systemic therapy like chemo, immuno, or not? From the surgical perspective, what immuno has changed is I can operate while someone's still on immunotherapy for the most part. Certain immunotherapies you can't, but a lot of them are safe.
But you can't do that when someone's on radiation?
You in the middle of radiation, you don't want to operate it on, right? And the best order of things usually from spine tumor perspective is surgery, then radiation. Mm. In some instances, the order is reversed. But the ideal is to do surgery and then radiation. So when you talk about these new chemos, immunoradiation, you have to understand where surgery fits in this paradigm to make it safe.
You know, you talk about the tumor being essentially a section that has broken DNA. And then you say radiation also breaks DNA.
Mm-hmm.
How is that, aside from killing what the tumor is, around that, if you have ancillary radiation, aren't you then exacerbating possible cancer all around it?
You can, but our cells are smart. They start to repair, right? So we have normal DNA repair mechanisms. So as long as you give the cell enough chance to repair, and remember, certain amount of radiation cell can tolerate without any issues. You have to give quite a bit for it to break and not be able to repair.
When someone has a stubborn tumor, sure, is there a limit on the number of times you can apply radiation?
Yes.
Or is there a lifetime limit?
Both.
Yeah?
Both. There's a limit in that session, and it's additive. So an example is, you know, Chernobyl, right? The nuclear reactor blew up.
Yep.
There's radiation everywhere. But then people couldn't go there for 50, 60, 70 years because there's still radiation there. It's the same idea. You still have radiation in that area that was treated. As time goes on, it starts to dissipate, but it's not zero.
You know, are there... And we have to get back to the phones. I'm sorry. But once we start talking about radiation,
sure,
I have many ridiculous questions. But regarding Chernobyl, okay, so you said 40, 50, 60 years, people had to stay away. The toxic radiation levels, and yet things lived. Animals lived and plants lived. Are there things about radiation we don't know?
Absolutely. And a bigger point is there's things about medicine we don't know. Right. To say we know everything is wrong.
Yeah.
There's things about medicine that we don't understand. And remember, medicine is not, it's mostly science, but there is an art. And there is so much more to discover. There's still a frontier that we don't understand. And that's what makes medicine exciting.
We're joined today by Dr. Ahmed Malaiz from Albany Medical Center. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll jump back to the phones in one moment. But one more email from Eileen in Rosendale. Eileen says, the pain doctor told me that bulging disc is not a pathology and that my problem is spinal stenosis. First steroid injection helped, second one was not. How does one know when surgery is needed for spinal stenosis? Will surgery alleviate the constant low back pain or make it worse? Physical therapy no longer works for me. And that's from Eileen in Rosendale.
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's important, you know, when I see a patient, that I tell them, let's look at your pathology and understand what symptoms this pathology causes. And the second thing is what the surgery will address. Not every pathology gives you the same problem, and not every surgery is good for different pathologies. So it's not just saying, oh, is it the disc going to cause stenosis? How could you cause stenosis? Does the stenosis cause claudication, you know, shooting leg, pain down leg? Surgery would address this, but not that. And having a clear and honest discussion, because success of surgery is based on expectations. If I tell someone, let's do surgery, I'll make you 20 years younger and 5 inches taller, it'll fail every single time, even if I take their pain away. But them understanding that there is an element of pain after surgery, forever type of pain.
Yeah.
The symptoms I will address are X, but not Y. When post-op, I do, you know, they get what I tell them. That's success.
So part of the art of what you do is managing patient expectations?
100%.
So interesting. All right, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Green Island, and it's Jay. Jay, go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've been enjoying your program as I've been listening on the radio because 8 years ago I had a spinal fusion surgery. Exactly like Dr. Malaiz described it in your show here with the screws and rods. And it luckily it went very well. I was interested in what changes have occurred. I was able to understand your point about like using carbon fiber instead of steel in some cases. But I wondered my worry at the time, and I was very fearful when I went into the surgery was, you know, how much of this does this doctor know, and how well, and when I heard Dr. Malaiz mentioning a lot of computers using vision, I would sort of be worried, does this help my doctor see better? I think they were showing me a lot of MRIs and things eight years ago when I did this.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Thank you. So let me just reverse and address. The carbon is for spine tumor patients only. The material now is titanium for degenerative patients.
Now, right, that's what, yeah.
And so the
I see, okay.
Yeah, and the technology, you bring up a great point. Technology cannot be a crutch, meaning you have to understand that if all technology fails, if the power goes out, if anything, are you still able to do the surgery safely? And if a person answers and the answer is no, then they shouldn't be doing the surgery. These technologies are to make it safer, but as a surgeon, you cannot rely on them. If you rely on the technology to get a patient off the operating room table safely, then I strongly argue that they are not equipped to handle the surgeries.
Jay, thanks a lot for the call. So, I mean, I often say people who use GPS all the time are losing their abilities to the atrophying of their ability to find their way around. Do you think there'll be a time when doctors are fully dependent on robotic surgery and some of these technical? In other words, you can go back and go old school 40 years ago techniques. But at some point, 20, 30, 40 years from now, is that going to be lost?
So that's a great question. I think that is the next logical, you know, point that we ask when we're training the next generation of neurosurgeons.
Yeah.
Is are we relying too much on technology? And this is what I'll argue, especially in neurosurgery. I can't speak for the other fields. Neurosurgery is still one of those fields where there may be a robotics, there may be a navigation, but you still need hands, you still need a human, and you still need an understanding of anatomy. Because the robot itself, and I've seen different surgeries and all that, the robot itself won't understand normal safe parameters. It relies on the operator, the surgeon, to tell the robot, to tell the GPS what is normal, what is safe, what is danger. So it behooves us as educators, you know, attendings for the residents, to help them understand we can use this technology, but you still have to understand normal and safe. Because if you don't, then if the operator is quite bluntly incompetent, that's when danger hits. So again, it's not a crutch. It's not a must use. It's to help you get to the next step of safety. But if you don't know your own, you know, if you can't, as we say, freehand, if you can't do this without the technology, that's a problem.
I'm sure they've done studies, but today in 2025, are the outcomes markedly better when a surgeon uses robotics over the old school method?
So there's a lot of research being published on this point. And again, what we're finding is it's not necessarily that we're seeing a significant difference in certain surgeries that robotics versus non-robotics. In some instances, robotics can make the surgery longer, person's on the operating room table longer, and there's margin of error from the robot. Where this technology, et cetera, is coming into play is almost as a double check mechanism where you know what you need to do. You know the safety. Let me double check. And it's correlative to what the computer, the robot, the navigation is telling you. Okay, so I double check. Now I know it's safe. Now I will proceed.
Are you using AI in your diagnosis yet?
Not yet.
No? It's coming though, ain't it?
It's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming.
Man. All right, let's go back to the phones. We'll go to Troy, New York. It's June. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I had developed a foot drop from a herniated disc, and I had 2-level fusion done. My back feels great, but I'm still dealing with the foot drop. What are the chances of it, my foot coming, going back to normal?
Yeah, no. So thank you for the question. So the way I counsel patients, if they have a neurologic dysfunction from, you know, herniated disc, from pathology, tumor, it's a 12 to 18 month recovery process. And what does that mean? It means that for the spinal cord or spinal nerves to heal, it's a year, year and a half long process. And during the year, year and a half, the most important thing is physical therapy. Physical therapy to make sure that there's no muscle atrophy, spasticity, things of that nature. After 12 to 18 months, the reason it's 12 to 18 months is we tend to plateau. You can gain some, but the greatest gain you're going to make is in that 12 to 18 month time frame. Now, it's, you know, if you talk about nerve recovering, nerve regeneration happens 1 millimeter a day. So if you think of the nerve going from low back all the way to foot, it's quite a little bit. Mm. So my recommendation would be physical therapy, continued physical therapy. And that, what does physical therapy mean? Do you have to go to a facility to do it? No. But being true to yourself and doing the exercises at home if you're not going to go to physical therapy, and then time. And then we see where we kind of land after that.
Thanks, June. Appreciate the call. Is there any hope for, you talk about nerve regeneration, is there any hope for spinal cord regeneration?
It's a great question. So a lot of research in spinal cord injuries is happening now. The spinal cord, again, it is not like the liver. The liver regenerates. We know that. The spinal cord doesn't regenerate. And that makes it very difficult when we talk about spinal cord injury. And a lot of what we do now is dealing with the after effects of spinal cord injury. We want to be at the forefront of how do we make it recover so a patient regains function. It's not easy. It's not easy because it's a complex network. Are we there in terms of understanding taking someone from severe injury, not walking to walking? Not yet.
Are we knocking on the door yet?
There's some great research out there, a lot of clinical trials. I still think we're a little bit away.
That'll be a good day, though. All right, let's go. Let's get a couple of more in here before we're done with Dr. Abed Malaise, and we'll go now to Oneonta. Gail, you're on.
Yes, doctor. If someone had an infected joint, total joint replacement, and there's an indication for spinal surgery, would that be able to be take place?
Yeah,
and
no.
The total knee is responding to Keflex 500 milligrams. It's staying at bay.
Yes, so
twice a day.
It's a great question. So anytime you talk about surgery, and specifically if we're going to talk about implants, the most important thing is making sure no infection, being infection-free. So before proceeding with any surgery, what is important is finishing your antibiotic course, no markers of infection. And this is where, you know, I would work with my infectious disease doctor or the primary doctor to make sure that the infection is completely cleared before proceeding and potentially doing harm by not letting the infection that's already there clear.
All right, Gail, thank you. Very quickly, we only have about 30 to 45 seconds for Stacy in Katona. Stacy, go ahead.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. This couldn't have come at a better time because my husband just got a diagnosis. He's been experiencing numbness in his legs when he walks, but not all the time. He can walk on a treadmill for a long time, et cetera. And he got an MRI, and the doctor said that he has degenerative stenosis, and they want to do a L3, I think, to S1 fusion. And when I went on a Facebook page that talks about fusion, all of these people were in extreme pain, et cetera, before they had their fusion done. And he's not at that level yet. And our question is, should he pursue this? And if he doesn't, will there be permanent nerve damage?
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I will say this. Again, when you talk about degenerative spine, it's quality of life metrics. So if he's able to enjoy his quality of life, do the treadmill, and he's not in any excruciating pain, and he's still performing his adult daily living activities, do not proceed with surgery, in my opinion. And that's just a global view. You know, I don't have his MRI in front of
right.
me. And if there's any ever a question, my recommendation to any caller, anyone listening, get a second opinion.
That's a good plan. And Stacy, we'll leave it there. Dr. Ahmed Malaise of Albany Med, you made it through the show.
Woo.
Yeah, I know, right? Great job. Thank you. And hope you come back again. I have a lot more to learn, obviously. So, but thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for your time.
Support comes from Dr. Jian Shen, specializing in endoscopic spine surgery and disc regeneration, treating disc herniations, spinal stenosis, and myelopathy. envisionspinesurgery.com for details. Once again, thanks to Dr. Ahmed Malaise of Albany Med for being here. Thank you for listening. Tremendous calls today, folks. And sorry if we didn't get to your question. We'll do this topic again. Thanks to Zach Malloy over there at Master Control. Lightning Eddie Rosen, beautiful job screening the call, sir. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, no Vox Pop. Instead, we'll bring you radio excitement, New York Governor Kathy Hochul's State of the State address. Gordon Fricke returns to this program on Wednesday to answer your car questions. We'll see you at 2 on Wednesday.